32 in the afternoon. Thank you guys for joining us. Before we get started with the agenda items, is there any public comment today? All right. Seeing none, then we will move on to the recognition of an outgoing committee member. And Devin, I believe that you're going to handle this one.
Actually, before we do that, I see Melissa is joining, so we now have a quorum.
Wonderful. Welcome, Melissa. Thank you for joining. So I will go back to the approval of minutes of our November 13th, 2024 meeting. Was there any discussion around those minutes before we vote? All right. Then is there a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve.
Thank you,
Terry Rogers.
Is there a second?
I can second.
All right, Alessandra is, so we have a motion to approve our November 13th, 2024 UTAC meeting minutes. Is any other discussion before we move on to vote? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion carries then. Thank you, guys. All right, and now we will move on to the recognition.
Yes, so it is very bittersweet, but today marks Terry Rogers' last BTAC meeting. So we just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge Terry's contribution to Bright. And even before that with CATS, she reminded me that she has been working on transportation in this region for 30 years. So she has seen it span from one end of the spectrum to the other. And it sounds like she was pretty pleased with the progress, so we'll take that as a win, that she was pleased with all the work that she has helped contribute to. So not only has Terry served in the capacity of leading transportation in the region, but she has also done a lot of work with her social work, working with Valley Community Services Board and Department of Social Services. And she has definitely left an indelible impression on our region for the better. So we just wanted to show our appreciation for the hard work she has done to make St. Augusta Waynesboro a better place and to start training the next generation that will be trying to fill her very big shoes that she has left. So it is my great pleasure that we have already presented Terry with her certificate and some flowers showing our recognition for her 9 years of service on the BTAC. So we will definitely miss her, but we know she's going to enjoy her retirement spoiling her grandson and maybe grand twin daughters if her daughter gets her way.
It really has been a pleasure to serve. Fun times throughout the whole entire time period, and the improvements on transportation for the hard to serve. I'm proud of what's been accomplished and hope to see much more accomplished. I appreciate you guys and the work that y'all do. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Yes, thank you very much, Terry. Wow, that's amazing, 30 years. Thank you very much. But yes, it will be bittersweet. So thank you, and enjoy time with that beautiful, beautiful grandchild. We are going to move forward now to our future outlook, a continuation of that from the last meeting. And I think that is Paula that is up to provide us with that outlook.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to share my screen. I only have like two or three very uninformative slides, but I thought it would be better than staring at my face while I talk to you all. All right, can everybody see a very bright orange page in front of them? Perfect. So as Crystal mentioned, we talked about this a little bit at our November meeting, but this is gonna be an ongoing conversation for a while. What we talked about in November, we have a little bit more information since then, but just as a refresher for those who were there and then for those who weren't able to join us in November, there are a couple of factors that we know of coming down the pipe that will ultimately have an impact on the cost to operate Bright and potentially could impact what your contributions as funding partners will be in the future. Let's see here. So a couple of those factors are, one, inflation and the cost to operate is increasing. We've seen some of the major impacts to inflation that happened right after COVID come down a little bit, but unfortunately our industry is having some of the lingering effects are still happening, and they're hitting our industry particularly hard, especially when it comes to vehicles, replacement parts for vehicles, and labor, the operators to operate the buses. It's, you know, getting harder to retain people as people are retiring, and enticing new people to enter the career field may require, you know, increasing costs and benefits and things like that. Beyond that, we know that we are going to have a new service contract that'll go into effect in fiscal year 2027. Our current contract with Virginia Regional Transit ends on June 30th, 2026, and we will be embarking on a competitive procurement over this next year, which I'll talk about at the end of this presentation, to put in place a new contract, whether that be with VRT or another agency if they're not the successful bidder. But it has to be a full and open competition. It has to be federally compliant. So that will impact the contract costs, essentially, for the next duration, whatever that's, 5, 10 years or so. We've been really lucky that we've been insulated pretty well from the rising costs of operation because we had pre-negotiated rates with that contract with VRT. So they've been doing a tremendous job providing service to us at, frankly, a cost a lot lower than what it actually costs to operate. So we know for sure that whatever contract we execute for FY27 will have an increase in that service hour rate. And it should be, to accurately reflect the cost to operate transit. And then the third element is that both the federal and state funding for transit is not keeping pace with the cost to operate. And the area of most concern right now is the federal funding for rural transit that DRPT receives from FTA. So they receive those rural funds from the 5311 program, and then they disperse those funds out to all the rural transit agencies in Virginia. And we are one of those agencies. That is kind of what the biggest topic right now has been, is DRPT is trying to figure out what that's going to look like for them, how they can potentially mitigate the impact of, you know, the same amount of money or less money with more transit agencies and more service costs coming online. There have been a few areas in Virginia that have been reclassified as rural since the last census. So even if there were not concerns about a reduction in funding availability, the funding pot as it is going to be stretched thin as more agencies come in for that same pot of money. So since the last time we all met with you, we attended a workshop for rural transit agencies hosted by DRPT in December. And here's what we know as of that workshop. Without any funding change, any additional funding, or a change to the way that DRPT allocates those funds, the current amount of money that they receive will not be enough to cover all of the existing transit agencies to be funded at the rate that they currently are being funded at. And as of right now, there have not been any specific or definitive decisions made about how DRPT is going to mitigate that, but they're taking it very seriously, and they are working with a consultant to help kind of explore all their possible options to make that money go further, looking at peer agencies in other states. This isn't an isolated Virginia thing. You know, the funding from the federal government is dwindling all over the country. So have there been other states that have been successful in mitigating this? What did they do to change their structure to make sure that they could still fund all their agencies? So they are doing a lot of research and digging into all of that. While they are doing that, we are also doing some internal analyses of what our system looks like. Are there potential efficiencies that we could find? And then doing some scenario planning based on what we think are some of the options that DRPT might come forward with in the next year or so. I think the one that would be of most significant impact to the funding partners here would be if DRPT were to either not be able to provide us with the full allocation that we've typically been getting, or if they were to raise the match rate required from the local agencies. Right now, the local agencies pay about 20% of the cost. All of our funding partners and then us, we chip in that 20%. If they were to raise that requirement to 30% or 35%, what would that look like as far as how much we would have to bring to the table? So that is, I think, in their eyes, that is the last resort. That is not what they want to do, but that could potentially be an option. So we are doing some scenario planning, thinking through different ways we deliver service to see what we could potentially come up with should we be faced with one of those situations. Microtransit is an option that we've been looking at. You know, we're currently undergoing the microtransit feasibility study, and through that, looking at how there's potentially different ways we could deliver the same amount of service without having to expand costs or rethinking how we get around the region and maybe even finding a better way to serve people through different structures. So all that is to say, nothing is changing at the moment. We just wanted you to know that these conversations are happening behind the scenes and that we are paying attention to them. We're in a better position than most agencies in the state because we are both urban and rural. And because we have different types of routes, we have a more diverse funding structure than other agencies do. We get rural funding, we get urban funding. We have a lot of community partners like yourself that help lessen the load for everybody who uses the system. And then because of the Acton Express and some of the other programs that we run that are a little unique, there may be other funding pots that those are eligible for that would then, you know, we could move those into another funding source, which would then reduce the burden on the overall, you know, big picture transit budget. So we're constantly trying to find ways to, you know, maximize all of the programs that we have available. And, you know, a lot of times it might sound like just talking points from the state, but I will say that we are really fortunate that DRPT is a very collaborative state agency. They truly are looking out for the best interests of all of our transit agencies. And they are proactively looking for ways to help us also. So they're keeping their eyes out to say, you know, if they see a program that the Acton Express might be eligible for, not only does that benefit them because it gets the cost of Acton Express out of their other pot of money, but it helps ensure that we have a dedicated funding source for some of these initiatives that we know are successful. So we've got great partners in Richmond, and I have all the faith that they're going to come up with something that will have the most minimal impact on our transit agencies, our localities, and our funding partners. Like I said, we're doing some scenario planning, so we will do a bunch of hypothetical outcomes and build out some budgets looking at that. It's a little hard to do that right now because we don't know what the contract costs will be starting in FY27. But once we have a little bit of a better handle on that, then we can do a bunch of different models that will tell us, you know, if DRPT says this, then this is what that might look like. If this is what is coming, then this is what we might be able to do to fix that. So we can get out ahead of it and we're not all joining together in 2027 and saying, oh no, what do we do now? So just know that that's all happening. We have just finished or almost finished this FY26 budget for transit, and none of these factors will impact FY26. So just to be clear on that, you should see, you know, assessments and contributions in FY26 that are relatively close to what they were for FY25. And if there is a slight increase, that would just be due to the normal increases that we're experiencing from, you know, the expanded service on some of the routes, paratransit, and then just overall cost inflation for things like utilities and maintenance. But none of these major things that are on the horizon are going to affect us this year. We've got some time to work through them. And just in full transparency, we just want to keep having this conversation with you all over the course of this next year to keep you up to date. As soon as we know anything, we will make sure that you all have that information as well. Before I move on to the next part of this conversation, which is our contract procurement, I wanted to open up the floor and see if anyone had any initial reactions, questions, thoughts, or anything they wanted to share about this topic. All right. a very exciting topic. So then the next thing I'm going to talk about a little bit, again, we mentioned this briefly in November, but we are starting the process of procuring our next transit service contract. Our current contract is in place through June 30th, 2026. So as of July 1st, 2026, we'll need to have a new contract in place. And that means we have to start that procurement now. It feels like every time we have to do something, the starting timeline for that is getting further and further back. But we are about to have a kickoff for this project later in January. We've hired Kinley Horn Consultants to provide some technical support to us. They will help us with defining the requirements, what we need in order to be able to deliver the service, what we would expect the service provider to bring with them as far as staffing, experience, operational capacity, and then the technical specs for things like the fleet, the buses themselves, what are the types of buses we need to continue to deliver the existing service, what types of vehicles we might need in the future if we were going to implement a different type of service, and they're going to help us with all of that. Devin and I wear many hats, and Danielle, but we do not know anything about technical specs of buses, so we're going to leave that to the professionals. But through the timeline here, through January to July, we'll be working with those consultants to define those requirements and to actually write the request for proposals. We plan to release that request for proposals by August 1st in order to keep us on our timeline. And then that would be out for bid for about a month and a half to 2 months. And then by the end of this calendar year, we will be evaluating the bids and hope to award a contract by December 31st. We want to give that 6 month window so that if there are any changes that need to be made, we have a transition period. If there's new vehicles that need to be acquired, that there's time to go out and get those, and just to have everything in place, you know, I's dotted, T's crossed before that July 1st date so that there is no impact to any of our riders, that they get on the bus July 1st just the same as they did June 30th and they don't see anything or feel anything really different. So that is where we are right now. We are going to be compiling a steering committee that is just us, DRPT, and a few others to be working in the background to kind of guide the conversations a little bit, but we will bring updates to you guys at the March meeting and then in May and so forth. So each time we have a new component that we might want to get your feedback on, we will bring that to you at these BTAC meetings. We figured nobody else wants to be in a steering committee that has more meetings than they already have on their calendar. So we'll take advantage of your time here at these BTAC meetings and we'll keep you updated along the way. But please, if you have any thoughts, questions about that, you can share them now or you can reach out to us, you know, outside of the BTAC meeting, or if you want to be involved in any way, let us know. And that's pretty much all I had. We'll kick it off with all of the downer stuff and then hopefully have some more fun updates throughout the rest of the agenda.
All right. Thank you, Paula. Are there any questions for Paula? All right. Well, then hearing none, we're going to move on to the fiscal year 2026, which sounds like it should be a long time away, but it's not, Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation grants. Danielle?
Yes. Hi, everybody. I don't know how thrilling this is as an update, but the DRPT grant applications for FY 2026 are open. The CSPDC will be making applications to several of these, including urban and rural operating and capital cost of contracting, capital, technical assistance, commuter assistance program operating, which is rideshare, and project assistance for the transit marketing grant. And these are all due February 1st, which is quickly approaching, so we will be very busy for the next couple of weeks getting these turned in. That is all. Thank you, Crystal.
And I will add a little point. I know Paula had mentioned when we're looking at the grant. So the main change for service that we're looking at is just expanding more paratransit service. Mm-hmm. We've been trying to get to Saturday service, but we felt that as we talked about before, it felt necessary to try to add Saturday service when there was such a demand during the week. So once we can try to mitigate this demand during the week, then we can look to expand on Saturday. So the past two fiscal years, as we've been trying to work our way to Saturday, we've been putting those Saturday hours back into the week with a second paratransit bus in Stanton. So right now that's operating 4 hours, which Leroy can chime in and let me know if that it sounds like it's helping a lot. So we're going to bump that up to 9 hours. So all three buses would be operating 9 hours. So hopefully that would be a greater improvement and less hair pulling at BRT as they're making those reservations for the access service. So that was where we decided to put any expansion this year was into paratransit.
Okay, that makes sense, Devin. Thank you for that explanation, and Danielle for that overview of the grants. We are now gonna move right on into microtransit feasibility study update from Devin.
Yes, so I will show my slide at the very end because I want to have some anticipation building up to what I'm going to be telling you. But as you all remember, our November meeting had our kickoff for the microtransit feasibility study. Thank you again for your input and that conversation. Kimley Horn took all of that information you all gave to them and went running with it and adding it into their analyses that they have been conducting in the background. So late last week, they presented their technical foundations briefing, which was a huge kind of backlog work into getting to the opportunity zones that we'll be looking at, and that will be presented to you a little bit later and a little bit more in detail. But to create this technical foundations briefing, Kimley Horn staff did plan reviews and noted any transportation challenges, comments, information that were listed in all of your plans. So they took a look at all the comprehensive plans for Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro, noting that you all are going through comprehensive plan updates, but they took the information that was available. Gareth and Zach also shared the LRTP, Thompio LRTP survey results, which was very helpful. And seeing all of those travel patterns and all those comments regarding transportation in our region. And so along with those plan reviews, they pulled the microtransit goals that you all confirmed at the last meeting. To remind you, that is to provide convenient, reliable, adaptable transit service, expand transit connections and mobility options to serve underserved areas, increase access to essential destinations, and complement existing transit routes, as well as prioritizing financially sustainable strategies that support local economic development, improve the quality of life for residents, and maximize resource efficiency. And then they also took a look at analyzing the region to identify some opportunity zones, which are those locations that are most suitable for microtransit, given the goals that I just outlined. So this analysis included assessing transit potential and need, as well as our existing service performance and travel patterns in the region. So don't feel like you need to know what transit potential is. I still have heard it like 3 times and I still kind of have to backtrack on what it is. But transit potential is defined by the density of residents and jobs. And so transit need is defined as having a higher concentration of people that have a greater propensity for transit. So Kimley Horn was using these metrics to kind of meet in the middle to find those zones that will be most beneficial for microtransit. So typically locations with low to moderate potential are more suitable for microtransit. And the reverse fixed route is good for areas with higher potential. So Verona, Stewartstraft, Weirs Cave, and Cremora were identified as those low to moderate transit potential areas. And then the areas with the highest transit need were Fishersville, Central and West Stanton, and Lynnhurst. So drum roll, let me make sure I'm gonna share the right screen. The opportunity, so this all of this analysis kind of culminated into finding those areas where it's going to be most feasible, which is defined with low to moderate transit potential and moderate to high transit need. So these were the outlying portions of Stanton and Waynesboro, Verona, Fishersville, Stuart Straft, Lyndhurst, Sherando, Cremora, and Craigsville. So they took all of that information and kind of have come up with these very, I guess, more the draft version of some opportunity zones. I say that because we do have the ability at this point during the analysis to give some input on these zones. So that's why I wanted to show you these today, because Danielle and I are going to be taking a look at these a little bit more in detail and providing our input by the 17th. So we wanted to show you today to see if you all had any knee-jerk reactions to seeing these different zones that popped up. So we have the North Stanton zone. There's also the South Stanton zone, Fishersville, as noted, Stuart Straft. There's also Green Bowl. And then we have South Waynesboro and North Waynesboro, Cremora area. So I will open the floor to see if you all have any knee-jerk reactions just seeing this. I can also send this out in an email, this link, because the cool thing about Remix is that you can click this little post comment button up at the top and come in here and post a comment. So I can share this link if you all feel comfortable navigating this and putting in any comments that kind of strike you. I know one of the things when they originally showed us this, I was a little hesitant to see such a large zone. If you remember Mike Norvall's presentation about Bay Transit's microtransit, usually small zones work the best. But Tyler did note that having a zone this big would require probably two vehicles. So there is there is room for feedback. Another note I'll share with you all, I know Jennifer Wetzel had mentioned the idea of having a Greenville zone that kind of intermixed with Stuart Straft, so it would abut more with Stuart Straft and become kind of like a node. So folks in Greenville could travel over to Stuart Straft, and then if the Stuart Straft link was there, then they could connect over to Waynesboro or Fishersville for even more connectivity. So kind of looking at getting any comments and feedbacks on changing any of these zones, or if you feel like one zone seems to really stick out to you, then you can definitely note that as well. The next step in this process will be to finalize these opportunity zones and then rank them in a prioritization that Kimley Horn is still tinkering on how they'll do the formula for the prioritization.
I'll just say too, before anyone jumps in, just a reminder that we are looking at all types of ways that we can implement this. So if you see a zone there that has an overlap where there's already fixed route transit, like that North Stanton zone where the BRCC is, or in Stuart Straft where the Stuart Straft link is, we have not gotten to a point yet in the assessment where they have given us insight on whether it would be good to add that as complementary service that, you know, enhances what's already there, or if that would replace a fixed route. All options are still on the table at this point, so keep that in mind when you contemplate these different zones.
Seven, do the colors signify anything, or?
No, I think it was just for them to be able to differentiate the different zones in a quick manner, so you can just off the bat see this map and know that there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 zones that really came through their analysis of looking at all of the data and all the input of hearing, and all of their analysis also cross-referenced our current existing service. Danielle can attest that it looks like we are serving a good amount of people, especially in the dense areas, when you overlay our route map with Kimley Horn's analyses maps. We are hitting all the target areas. So you're not the service is doing what it should be doing. But yeah, it actually, you can kind of see these gray routes that pop up when you hover over them are existing transit routes.
Okay, cool. And then my other question was the coverage stats that are down in the bottom left-hand corner. Yes. Are those overall or are they specific to each?
They probably are overall, because then when you click in the zone, you'll see the service stats pop up. And this, the service stats, I might have to check with Tyler on, because that's an input that he can put into Remix as to how much that's going to be costing. So bear with me on the service stats, but the coverage stats are all auto-generated in Remix. So they have all the ACS data, so the population, people in poverty, and also those people who are non-white and Hispanic, all of those are coming from census data. So I will check to see with Tyler what service stats you put in, like the operating cost, because that's what's going to be driving the service stats.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
But yeah, you don't, I know it's a lot that I threw at you at this moment, which is why I said I can definitely share that link so you all can take a greater detail look. Or if you have any questions or comments, you can email them to me and Danielle. Like I said, we'll be sharing our feedback with Kimley Horn by the 17th and letting them know any questions we have or if we think some of their zones should shift a little bit. So your input would definitely be good if you wanted to see some, if you thought that there was a zone that you thought should be showing here, definitely feel free to email us so we can take a look at that in further detail.
Well, thank you, Devin. I look forward to taking a look at that when we email it out and providing some comments. And I know the rest of us do as well. Did you have anything else for the study update?
Nope, that was the bulk of it.
Wonderful, thank you. Then we will move on to Danielle for the Afton Express update.
Yes, thank you. The annual Afton Express Rider Survey is live and it will be open until January 17th. And we put this survey out every year really to get a better understanding of rider experiences and rider needs. And so data from this can really help improve service and can help inform future decisions about the Afton Express. So it's really valued feedback we get from this survey every year. And once the survey closes, we will compile and analyze this data and we'll put together a report and it will be released. So you'll all get to see it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Danielle. We look forward to hearing those results. Next up, we have a contractor update. I don't know if Steve is on the line or if one of his colleagues are here to provide us with that update. Oh, LaBroy, there you are. Sorry about that. Yes.
Okay, well, we've got some modest gains of passenger numbers from over the year, over the last few months, especially with the state in demand, which is why we have to keep adding those hours to the weekday and to the weekend. The 250 connector is also growing, and noticeably, Afton Express has also started to grow in the last few, I'd say, weeks or so, which is good for us. We're appreciating that. We've got good numbers of ridership at the Stanton Crossing, and the Augusta Health Stop has been a major improvement, and it's picking up, and it's been a major draw for a lot of passengers. Driver recruitment, that's an ongoing process. As for any transit agency these days, it's an ongoing process. We're recruiting more part-time drivers for Afton Express and Bright Bus. The changes to the Northwest Loop and the downtown trolley have been well received, especially the earlier hours have been very well received, and the Middlebrook Tray stop is this a continuing process. Yeah, it's been short and simple. That's all I got for you.
All right. Thank you, Leroy. Good news. Thank you. And we appreciate the good communication about the weather updates the last couple of days. That was very clear and effective communication. So thank you all for that. I think maybe there's a little bit of other business from the team about this month. days that are going on?
Yes, I think in 2 weeks already, January 27th in Richmond, it is the VTA Transit and Rail Advocacy Day. So we will all be there. We're excited about it. I don't know if anyone else is planning on attending, but we would love to see everybody there.
Wonderful.
Crystal, I have one other thing I just wanted to add. You may already be familiar with Brian, Libby, and Alex. But they are joining us here in the BTAC and maybe joining us more regularly. They represent the towns of Bridgewater, Dayton, and Mount Crawford, who are also served by our transit system via the Blue Ridge Community College shuttles. We just wanted to welcome them in and have them join these meetings and be able to know what's going on in the system that runs through their towns and share any input and feedback that they have along the way. So you guys are welcome to join us. You got lucky, your first meeting was via Zoom, so you could stay in your comfy, warm house. But we, you know, hope you'll join us in person here in Stanton in the future. But you're always welcome at any time.
Paula, thank you for calling that out. Should we have them introduce themselves so we know who is from who? Would that be helpful for everyone?
We can put them on the spot. Libby, you want to take it?
And then I was at the end of the meeting instead of the beginning, but we could do a round robin of introductions so they all can know who we are as well.
Sure. Hi, I'm Libby Clark. I'm town manager at Mount Crawford.
Welcome, Libby.
Thank you.
Brian Bourne. I'm town manager in Dayton.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, I'm Alex Wilmer, Assistant Town Manager for the Town of Bridgewater.
Hi, Alex. Welcome. Danielle, do you feel it would be helpful if we did introductions for everyone?
Definitely. Yeah, I can keep it going. Hi, everybody. I'm Danielle Gannon. I'm a transit planner at the CSPDC.
And I am Devin Thompson. I'm the Transit Program Manager at the CSPDC.
I think they already know me. I invited them to the meeting, but I'm Paula Malister, the Director of Transportation here at the PDC.
Harry Rogers, outgoing committee member, and Lexi Have will be at the next meeting as my replacement. She is in the Bahamas right now, needed a vacation before she takes over my caseload.
Good for her.
I'm Al Santon Barge. I'm the city planner in Waynesboro.
Hi, I'm Amanda Kaufman, assistant city manager for Stanton.
Hello, I'm Leroy Sweezy, Operations Supervisor for BRTs, alternate for Steve Wilson.
Good afternoon. I'm Phil Thompson, Director of Operations for Virginia Regional Transit. We serve 16 different counties across the Commonwealth of Virginia.
All right, Zach, you're up next on my screen.
Zach Beard, CSPDC.
And I'm Gareth Bartholomew, also from the CSPDC.
I'm Darren Smith, the director of the Stanton Downtown Development Association.
Rodney Rhodes with City of Stanton Community Development Department.
Wonderful. Is that everybody? I've been trying to keep track. Is anybody other than me? Melissa, you still?
I'm Melissa Walker, Director of Public Safety at Blue Ridge Community College.
Melissa. And I'm Crystal Moyers. I am the Administrative Director of Community Partnerships and Marketing and Communications at Augusta Health. And I previously lived in Bridgewater. I now live in Mount Crawford. And my husband was previously the treasurer of Dayton. So I'm connected to all three of you that are joining new today. So thank you all for joining us. Is there any other business today that we have to cover? Okay. Hearing none, then I will adjourn the meeting at 3:12, and our next meeting is on March 12th, 2025, and I believe that will be in person at the office. So I look forward to seeing you all in person then.
Recording stopped.
Thank you all so much for your time, and enjoy the residuals.